Accession number 18212, Reel 2.
Derek Burke, Reel 2.
Oh, and same as I was saying, it was that cold, and we didn't have proper wear or anything. I never even had an overcoat and that. And this young soldier was in this GP, came down, and we was giving him hot drinks and one thing and another. And he was telling us that he was the major's driver who'd been killed a few miles up the road. And they told him about them that his officer had got the VC for the actions up on the Yellow River. And I think when they were seeing them all going away, all in lines coming through us, we wondered, you know, what was going to happen. We was real worried that we was, because we were only young men. We were only 19, you know, 20, and except for the reservists, who was men who'd seen one war, and they were showing us all the old soldier sticks, how to keep warm, how to cook, and everything. And because if you put your cup to your mouth, it fetched the skin off your lips and everything if you didn't warm it up properly. You shaved in the morning, and we used to use American gel then. You couldn't use water or anything like that to shave. We were looking to get this American shaving gel to shave. But we had to shave because, I mean, we were the British Army. We had to be looked clean and everything every day, best we could. And then, as I was saying, these were pulling through us, and then the Turks came, and they were the last through us, the Turkish regiment. And they was wild. They was wild. They were telling us the best they could through the interpreter that the last village he was coming through, a sniper had shot one of their men. And they went back, this is truth, this. They went back and they killed everything in that village. Dogs, cow, everything they killed. I'm not talking about human beings, but they said they did, but I won't repeat that. And they come through us and they were drinking tea and one thing and another with us. And they were bloodthirsty. I was glad when they went because we was all frightened of them. But after we met again, further down the line, some months after, they was great. And they all remembered us, what we'd done, give them hot drinks and everything, and they'd do anything for us. We had a good name there, the Zars, in Korea. Anyway, the next morning, we was pulling out, ready to pull out. And the funny thing was, there was a bridge near us going over the river, and the Americans had got already for blowing, and they wanted to blow it before we got back across. And so there was a man on a white horse. One of the British officers, I think. I didn't know for sure, but I'd seen it. And on the middle of the bridge, walking up and down the bridge so they wouldn't blow it up. And most of the tanks got through. Then when Mr. Norris, my officer, I wasn't in his tank crew, I wasn't. They tried to start up, and the tracks was frozen to the ground. And as he tried to pull or twist to get it away, the track broke, and I think the idler broke on the track. And we didn't have time to get repaired, because there was only a few of us up, see, there wasn't a full-scale ream or anything like that up to repair it. And according to the intelligent planes and that were sending us messages, the Chinese was just up the road. So they decided then that they had to destroy the tank. Now, this was the first Centurion in action to be blown up, ever. And so I helped, not just me, like quite a few of us helped, and they put, they broke all the secret things up for the gun and that, because that was a secret thing for keeping the, it was for keeping the gun level when you was on the run. A tank gun. It was the only one in the world at that time. Stabiliser, it was. And so they had destroyed that all inside the turret and everything, smashed it all up. And then they put dynamite in and that and blew it up. And it, first time it went up, then the second time it went with such a woof. And it was a shame to see a good new tank go you know, would have been come all them miles up there and never seen action. Got to be blow it up. And then we pulled over the bridge. I was at Lorries. And we pulled up over the bridge and we watched it, you know, get finish off just about the tank and that. And then we pulled back and we was on the road. We never had a meal for, I think, about 30 hours. Cold, 30 below freezing. Terrible. Nowhere to keep warm. We're on the move all the time with on these lorries and that, these teeth runners. And we got lost. We took the wrong track and we finished up in one of the beautifulest places. It was like being in heaven. It was like a small pagoda, and it was a religious place, it was, but there was nobody there. And there was like, it was on the hillside, the pagoda, and then below it, there was like three small swimming pools, as I can describe. There wasn't swimming pools, that's all, there's all religious things about, and that. And we stopped there at night. I don't know if any of us slept hardly, we've been in this place. And the next morning, we got on the road again and we got back onto the main road, and all of a sudden there was our cooks on the side of the road cooking and that, and we stopped, and I can say that it was the most enjoyable meal I've ever had in my life. Two fried eggs between two slices of dry bread. And this was about this point when it was just getting light, it was, and it were a miracle, because there were miles from anywhere and you come across a stove going by. I know one at Cook's, it was Kaus Kearns and his mate, great lads there was. There was our cooks for our squadron. And and then when we'd had that, we got on the road again and it was hell on earth. There was trucks of fire, light, Americans were pushing stuff over to keep the roads going, and there were tanks ablaze, American tanks, and there were fires all around, the Americans blazing everything, not leaving anything and blowing things up. It was like being in hell in one way, because everything was fire and everything was blowing up. And the Americans were just wild. And a bit after that, I was with the Americans a bit, and this officer was telling me that he'd been to the American company, what they call the big American school in America, where they train all the officers, Point, West Point. He'd been there and he'd never been taught how to retreat. None of the American army had been taught to retreat. And he said, that's why you see this going around, all this blowing up and everything. He was just stupid. Brand new clothes, boxes and boxes on what we could have done with, just set a fire. Anyway, we come across some boxes at Pyongyang, just outside Pyongyang, I think it was. And we broke them open, and there was all these American raincoats in, and they were great, they was beautiful, there was, and these in them days cost $28. That was the price of this American officer told us, and we all got these Macs, as there was military style Macs. The officer come across and he's seeing us all in these Macs, and we're all tired and thing, and he says, who do you think you are, Humphrey Bogart? And with the words he said, this officer, I think it was Mr. Cook, the officer, I'm not sure, because he was a lad with a, you know, an officer with a bit of spirit, and he said, you all look like Humphrey Bogart behind that lorry. We're all behind, sat it back in this lorry, trying to keep warm and that, and most to our lot and these overcoats, these Macs, there was, you know, military style Macs with a skirt on the back and everything, and they had like a fur, a teddy bear inside where it could zip on or zip out, taking one for winter, one, you know, and they were marvellous, there was. And anyway, we had them took off, it was after a week or so when we got down to Seoul. I think his first stop was after the retreat. And we kept stopping on the way, leaguering up and that, and it was, I think we were in a bit of array, disarray with us. until we all got back together. I think we'd hit a soul, it was. And then we retreated again to Suwon. And then all the tanks were dug in and everything. And Brigadier Brody, he says he's not moving back no further. Because the idea was, they were saying, was that to extend their lines of communication, Chinese, far enough so they couldn't, they had to do everything at night and that, you know, so we could hold them back then, he says. And then Americans ordered some of us, well, not some, a few of us, back to Japan, because they were ready for giving Korea up, there was, and all our tanks and that, you know, we were sent back to Japan, and we were put on a cattle ferry, it was, across to Sasebo in Japan, and there the Americans met us, and they were great to us. They was lovely, lovely people to us, these Americans. And I think their camp was called, I don't know if it was Fort George or Fort William. Anyway, all the lads went up and they left so many of us to look after stuff on the docks, our cases and stuff and that. And they must have forgot us 4 or 5, because it was getting dark at night and we'd been there about 8 or 9 hours. So this Japanese man who was on the docks, he got in touch with the Americans and said, tell them that we was down here and we were starving and that. And these came down in the jeeps and took us all up, and they gave us all washing facilities and soap and everything. It was beautiful. I mean, we never had this for over a year, you know, washing that. And then they took us into the mess, and each one of us had a guide, American guide, with us, each one of us. It was marvellous, it was. We've never seen anything like. And there was all this food all laid out in these hot pans. And there were steaks, you know, the 10 inches, 10 by 10. You know, they could sole your boots with them, as our lad used to say. And we had a great... And then when we got to the end, this big coloured American cook, he says to me, you can't have steak without this, brother. And he poured this, raspberry juice on it, on top of the steak. And it was great. We had all this food on this tray. Sat down and, you know, we eat it till we couldn't eat no more. We were, and then they took us to his beds, and they were marvellous. The Americans to us, they looked after us and that, and there was all most of them hadn't been to Korea. There was reservists called up like for the Korean War, and this one who was looking after me, he was a teacher, and he was from the deep south. And he was asking us about it, and he was very, very worried about it, you know, and because he said he showed me photographs of his three girls and his wife and his father and everything. And he was a teacher, and same as he said, they were all buying the property and everything, and one thing another. And he was near on crying because he didn't know what was going to happen, you know. And anyway, I think the next day we left there and we went up to Kure. And that's where we were billeted. I was only there about 8 days, and then we was took back to Korea. And we landed at Daegu Airport. That's where we landed. And then we made his way back to his regiment, and so on. And then after that, we went up and down the country from one side to the other, supporting the Americans, supporting the 29th Brigade, mostly the Ulster Rifles and the NFs. We was in the Australians, 3rd Division. I know this because I've got trophies from them. Because when we used to get pally with each other and that, we used to give each other something to remember each other of, and one of the third division, American regiment, he gave me his div sign off his jacket, he ripped it off and gave me. And then I've got another one in from the Australians and everything. And that's how we used to do. And that, I mean, it was the companionship in Korea. It was great. I mean, the Aussies with the eight hussars, they was great. There was, and so was some of the Canadians and the Americans. I mean, if it weren't for the Americans, we'd have starved, because at one point we were 6 months without fresh food, anything fresh, no bread or anything, and we lived on hardtack. And if it weren't for the reservists who was with us, showing us how to crush hardtack biscuits up and make an oatmeal for morning, you know, and all this and that, burning open fires, and how to keep things fresh by digging holes as best you can, because it used to be rock hard there, and make an hole and put your stuff in it to act as a fridge and everything. The reservists, they were, well, I don't think half of us would have come back if it hadn't been for them, the tricks they showed us. And now, you know, we had one in each crew and that, and it was marvellous, because they'd all seen action in Italy and Germany and some in Burma even, and that, and they were great companions to us, reservists, to us young lads. And then I can remember on my Paris day, I was 21 and I was on guard when I was 21 at the night, and it was snowing, and we was in a place called Agricultural College, we used to call it. It'd be an agricultural place, but all that was left of it was little buildings with no roofs and all, because they was all made of paper, you know, and rice straw and all that. And the heating used to be under the floor. They used to make a fire under the floor outside, and it used to bring the heat up. And as long as they say, as long as your feet are warm, Crean saying was that you warm all of your body, as long as your feet was warm, and that. And I was on guard with this other chappie, and it was about the snow come up to his knees, and it was all fresh now. And all of a sudden we seen these Northumberlands coming through us, and we said, what's wrong? They said, well, it's time you were getting moving, time you were stacking tanks up, because, you know, we're retreating, and that. And all of a sudden everybody were called to, and they started starting tanks up, you know, and that, and we were throwing petrol on tracks to, you know, to light them, to melt it, all the frost and all this and that off them. And we retreated then, and then that was in March, I think it was, beginning of March. And on the 17th of March, we being Irish regiment, we used to have a good deal of Paddy's Day, no matter where we was, we celebrated. And this day there was, we played the Korean football, International 11 football, we did. And then they put us a show, and there were a box outside, it was all outside this March, and the weather were getting warmer then. And I always remember there was a chap there, and he was a fire eater, he was, and he put all his sawdust in his mouth, and he set it to fire. And all of a sudden, something, it all went wrong. He all burned his mouth, and he spit it all out of his mouth, and that, you know, and somebody went and threw a bucket of water on him. That was a big laugh of the day, that, you know, and that, and all them sort of things, used to, you know, and that. And we used to get plenty of drink out there, if you could afford it, because it was, you couldn't buy one bottle, you used to buy a case of Ataki beer, Japanese beer. I've still got a label somewhere in one of my drawers where I steamed off. And I can remember the Americans weren't allowed to drink alcohol after the first 6 months. The women's committee in Washington, who were very forceful in America, there was that many young Americans getting shot in the foot and everything, shooting themselves to get out of it, that they stopped all alcoholic drink to the Americans in Korea, and that. And so we had a good trade. And I can remember once when I was saving up to go on leave for my R&R to Tokyo, I was selling then a bottle for $9. Well, at that time there was I think it was nearly $5 to the pound in them days. I'm not sure, it was three point some dollars to dollars to the pound. So we were on a good thing, like, you know, it was lads, like, but we had nowhere to spend it, the money, and that. And but there were some good times and there were some bad times. But I think as you look back, and that, how it's took toll of a lot of men, you know, how the symptoms and that they've come up with, you know, and nothing's been done for us at all. But we've had letters and that telling them, asking you to fill these questionnaires in and that, but you never get replies from them. And that's all done by the Korean Association, like, not by the government.
What kind of symptoms?
Well, muscular, and heart, kidney, and all that sort of thing. You know, there's a lot of people with different things and that. And you don't realise anything this until you have a meet, till you meet. And you see people, you get talking to people who have heart trouble. Hell of a lot of trouble with heart trouble and that.
Did you suffer from something yourself?
I had malaria. I had malaria when I was... That's why I was in Tokyo Hospital. When I finished my hour and hour, I never knew no more until 8 days later on, until I came round and I was in hospital at Ebisu, Japan, and in this Commonwealth Hospital, and they told me I'd been out 8 days with malaria and that. And so they were very good to us. You know, the nurses, and that, the Australian-American nurses there. And there was great because it was a mixed hospital, you know, there was Americans, Canadians and everybody in it, you know, United Nations Hospital, Commonwealth Hospital and that. And I had that malaria. And then I went back to Korea when I got over it. And they flew me across in a Dakota, dropped me off at Daegu Airport. It was like a big field, it was. And I had to find my regiment, and it took me 3 days to find, you know, you just on the road, find your regiment, you know, your squadron. And that I was looking for a squadron for 3 days. And that, anyway, found it and that. And then on the December, was it, became, we set sail for home, I think it was, December. And that, but there was a lot of good and a lot of bad ways, you know. It was some of the things that people did, and
such as,
well, Americans. It was terrible. There was, I'll give you an instance. There was these two Americans came up in jeep when General Walker was taking over. Yeah, General Walker, I believe it was, who were taking over the old command, like, you know, the
not
Korea.
Ridgeway.
No, Ridgway, Walker, I think it was Walker who got killed a few days after, I'm not sure, but yeah, Walker got killed near one of our leaguers, yeah. And these two lads come in, two soldiers, and they said, like, you know, do you know where we can get some stuff from for General Walker's office, you know. And so there was all this somebody there who, you know, bit of a thing, and this officer says to me, you remember, you know where these things are. So we went in this jeep. With these, I don't know, two stars or three stars, I can't remember. I know they had them blazing out, the, you know, red and gold stars, you know. And we went to this place, it was a few miles away, and looking for carpets and one thing and another, and we stopped this place and asked them, you know, anything and that. And I went looking outside, and when I came back, these two Americans were assaulting these two girls. You know, that's how there was. I mean, it was terrible, some of them. And one of them, he was on it, missed about, and they were screaming. You know, and I went, I was carrying a bayonet, well, most of it did bayonet, and it was sharpened like a dagger. We used to open tins with it and all sorts of things, like, you know. And I said, I was trying to pull him off and that, you know, tell him, and that, and he won't get off, so I put bayonet, you know. I cut him out, marked him in him, but he got off. And then this girl, she got his penis in her mouth. Because that's what we're trying to force her to do. And she bit it. She wouldn't let go with her teeth. And this American, he had a lot of pain, you know. But I thought, well, she's all caught, like, you know. And I had to hit this girl right back at head to make it lose a grip, you know. And that, and it was terrible things people used to do, you know. And it turned out that these two girls, they were what you call wax, they was in the Korean army, you know, and that they was up there for a, I don't know if they were on leave or on a mission, because it was miles from anywhere, like, you know, and that. And it, different things used to happen. The Americans used to think, I shouldn't say this, should I, that they was king, and everything they, you know, they ruled everything and that. I mean, they were good to us because they used to buy our stuff and that and give us good food and one thing another. Same as I was saying about the 6 months we were without fresh food, and we could smell the French cooking bread. You know, all these sort of things, we had nothing was British in Korea. We're called the Forgotten Army, and we was. We was, it were, and we were all young lads, most of us, and a lot of us under 20, and then there were these older reservists, you know, and that.
Who do you think was responsible for the lack of preparation?
Oh, it was Attlee. I don't get anybody to say, well, the government who was in then, and we wanted to give up with the Americans. I mean, it was just stupid. You know, we had no time to preparation. We was given leave in two separate lots because it was a secret that we were going to Korea. So we hadn't got to tell nobody we were going to Korea or anything. So they give us one 7 days, then a few weeks after another 7 days, you know, for your embarkation leave. Instead of 14 days embarkation leave, you had two broken weeks, you know. And all this, it was, and everybody knew we was going. I mean, everybody knew we was going. They did, but the silly things, what used to happen, and that, and...
What rank were these two Americans who tried to rape the two?
I think sergeants. Sergeants.
So they didn't succeed in doing it because of you?
No, well, see, we're morals concerned. Not just me, but quite a few. You know, we didn't believe in that sort of thing. You know, me being brought up a Catholic and of a big family, you know, and we knew we were poor and all this and that. A lot of us didn't believe in that. A lot of us didn't. I mean, British weren't. There wasn't pure white, like, you know. I mean, things what a lot of them used to do, but you do it in action. You know, you do it when you're in danger and anything like that. But the Australians, they was good. They was, I think, the best fighters in the world, Australians, the diggers. And they used to do all sorts of tricks on the Americans, you know. These Americans was going up to the front in these GMC lorries, packed with them, and all these Yanks were waving, and this league of what we were in with the Australians. We're mostly together, Australians and us, it was ours, and that. And one of them, he threw his hand grenade in the back of this lorry, this American lorry. And all these Americans, they all flew out, because it was only a dirt road, that's all there was, you know, on each side. There was these paddy fields and a dike, water dike, and they used to call, and they all jumped. Some landed in, you know, full kitten in this water. So he hadn't pulled the pin out, he just tossed it in. And that's the tricks they used to get up to, you know. I mean, you had to have things like that to keep you going.